Hey everyone, hey, and welcome back to yet another episode of Alpitalica. This is your host, Tom Quee here. We are back for another song, another cover. In this case, it is Tuesday's Gone, the penultimate track from the first disc of Garage Inc. This is, it's a live song. It's not really a studio song, of course. It's a Lynyrd Skynyrd song. And today we're going to get into that band. We're going to get into Metallica's cover of it, the live performances we've done, the history, all of that sort of stuff. Just before we get to the guest and the song, please follow us at MetallicaPod. Get in touch with me, MetallicaPod@gmail.com. If you want to hop on the show and discuss something, all the songs are now full. You know, we're pretty much almost at the end of the track listing here, of our own track listing. This is episode 146. We're looking to run to about 164 or so. So yeah, only a couple of months left of the show. But if you want to come on and discuss something else, for instance, we've just done a Guitar Hero episode, and we're going to do an episode on the doodles that Metallica do, and we're going to do one on the Metal Massacre tape that Hit the Lights was on with Lloyd Grant and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, there's lots of surplus material that I want to get into after the show is actually done proper. So if that interests you and you want to hop on and discuss something, MetallicaPod@gmail.com. If you enjoy the show and you want to give back, Patreon is there. I'll put the link down below. We put all the episodes like this on there first. You get access to an RSS feed, so you can download them straight to your phone. Spotify is there. iTunes is there. Leave a review. Tell a friend. All that good stuff. But today, I'm joined by someone that had a great conversation with before. We talked about the Prince. Rick, how's it going?
Very good, Tom. How are you today?
Very well, very well. Where are you calling from again, sorry?
I'm from Princeton, New Jersey.
Okay, so not exactly Skynyrd country, right?
Oh, no. Not at all.
And where are you a fan of Skynyrd? Like, are you big into this band? What's your opinion?
I'm not a big fan. Obviously, I know the major tunes that are on classic rock radio for the last 30 years.
Yeah.
But I've never been a big country rock fan, if that's how you want to call them. And I'm also not super into the kind of Southern Man type of stuff.
Sure. I mean, that flag recently, right? Very controversial.
Yeah, probably not something we want to get too into, but right. It's not. Let's put it this way: what they seem to represent is not something that I tend to support.
No. I remember, you're like a Johnny Marr fan, right? I can feel you being quite a long
absolutely,
way away.
Absolutely,
yeah. Skynyrd. I don't mind that Southern rock sort of crunk bayou. I mean, Dr. John's a bit of a far flung comparison. But you know that sort of feel that they get. I quite enjoy that, and I quite like the free guitar assault. And I was thinking to myself before I did this episode, because again, yeah, I'm not a giant Skynyrd fan either. I don't really know them that well. Although I must say, I haven't listened to their debut in prep for this. And there are some good songs on that. And I'd never actually heard the song Gimme Three Steps before. But I know that's one of their more popular tracks. And the rhythm guitar on it is fantastic. It's got such a boogie to it. It's really been playing in my head this last week. But yeah, as with most things, because I'm a millennial, the way I discovered most bands inadvertently is through video games and through Grand Theft Auto. And Freebird was on San Andreas, as so many other songs are. I believe it was on the station that Axl Rose was the DJ of, K-Dust. So that was always in the back of my head. And then one of my favorite bands, actually, I don't know if you're aware of them, Rick, Drive-By Truckers.
Yep, sure.
So huge fan of that band, and I think it's their second or third album, basically their breakthrough album, Southern Rock Opera, is all about Skynyrd. Both explicitly kind of tells the story of the band. Like, there's an early song called Ronnie and Neil, and the final song's called Angels and Fuselage, and it's kind of told from the cockpit as they're crashing into the swamp. It's an amazing song. But it's also kind of, it uses Skynyrd as like a prism to sort of dissect and skewer the South. And, you know, I learned a lot of history from that. They speak about, like, people like George Wallace, for example. And, you know, it's a really good record, and it's all about Skynyrd. So I was kind of aware of Skynyrd, and they've got loads of sort of Skynyrd riffs they incorporate into the music and stuff like that. But I mean, getting on to Metallica, you know, James is born and bred in Downey, but he always feels like a bit of a Southern gent to me, and it's not surprising that they'd want to cover a Skynyrd song. You know,
I completely understand that from both his angle, and also, like you said, Skynyrd, for whatever they are, they have outstanding musical skill, and their guitar, the way they use their guitars, certainly something that's become its own genre almost. So I can see a band kind of getting into that Southern rock metal, a metal band getting used to getting into that Southern rock kind of boogie, like you said.
And I was doing a bit of research as well, and in 2004, this is from Blabbermouth, where basically Ozzy Osbourne was asked and James was asked to list their top 10 greatest songs of all time. And James put Freebird to the top of his list. Quote, Freebird fit my life for the first 20 years on the road, not really getting too attached to stuff, living life for the moment and moving on. I mean, so I just thought this might have been like a discharged Diamond Head type thing, but clearly Skinner'd mean a lot to Papa Het.
Yeah, and I guess I'd say that's almost kind of an embarrassing answer for him, but right. At the same time, you know, music moves people in different ways, and if that's what moved him, I certainly understand that.
Mm-hmm. And we'll get into this cover then. So, you know, I know you've been a Metallica fan for quite a while, so do you remember first hearing this? You know, I'm guessing, was it a bit of a surprise, perhaps, being on Garage Inc.? Because I love how this song ends, and then we go into The More I See, which is a complete polar mm-hmm. opposite. You know, it really displays a dichotomy of the influences, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I first came across this on the album. I don't think I knew any of the, you know, heard any of the radio versions that led up to this or any of those things, live versions. I don't remember hearing them. I personally think it's doesn't make sense that it's on this album, and even though it's, you know, we're talking covers, sure. This kind of jammy live cover fit in with all these super produced other songs just really stands out oddly to me.
Yeah, completely. I mean, you know, it's not really playful, it's not really a reinterpretation, it is this kind of loose barroom jam, as you say. And just a bit of history if people weren't aware, so this was recorded at the end of 97, the 18th of December, on Don't Call Us, We'll Call You, which is this is a sort of session on KSJO, which is in San Jose. You know, it's a real who's who of kind of the coterie of stars that surround Metallica. So we've got Pepper Keenan from Corrosion of Conformity with co-lead vocals, Jerry Cantrell, of course, of Alice in Chains on guitar, Sean Kinney on additional percussion of Alice in Chains, Jim Martin, who goes by Fatso, I think he wasn't in Faith No More at this time, John Popper from Blues Traveler, Les Claypool on banjo from Primus, and most interestingly, Rick, Gary Rossington from Lynyrd Skynyrd, who, you know, was in the plane crash, survived, and is now the only original member who continues to play in the band.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I think that the interesting thing about that, him specifically being on the track that makes the album, is you almost wouldn't know it.
No.
If not from the song, not from a particular part that they call him out on. I think at the end, you know, they throw up some of the names.
Yeah.
But really, you wouldn't even know that he's there. You'd think that if he's going to be that link, they might want to promote that in some way. Perhaps they did on the radio show and we just don't hear it on the album. I don't know.
Well, it's funny you mention that, because, you know, they've played this song a few times live, 5 times live, and they did it at the anniversary shows. And I don't know if you read the comments on the YouTube, but every single comment is, why the fuck? Because Gary's just at the back. Like, James seems to be rocking out with Pepper Keenan way more. And, you know, Gary, like, I watched a documentary on Skinner recently, really good one that got, I don't know, it was on, like, US television or something. Gary always has that wide-brimmed hat. He always seems like a sort of quiet dude back to himself. But the fact that he's there, the fact that he was in that cheap little plane that Aerosmith didn't want to buy, it was, like, on its last legs. You know, the plane where Ronnie Van Zandt and all the Steve Gaines died and stuff. You just would have thought Het would have made a bit of a bigger deal out of it.
I completely agree. I think that it's very interesting that he just kind of sits in the background. He takes a little bit of a solo here, and then he just fades back to the background again.
Yeah.
That might have just been the way he was as a person and didn't want to be called out. No.
Maybe so. And obviously they extended the invite, so they weren't ignoring him on that front, and that just is his persona, and it's still really cool that he's there. But it's just kind of, I don't know, you would have thought he'd be up front, you know, he'd be sort of deified in that way, but he's not. But let's get to the Garage Inc. tune itself. And, I mean, I really, really like the energy in this song, and just, like, how well are the guitars recorded in kind of a ragtag way? But the instruments, I think, are captured quite brilliantly. They feel really alive in the room, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, and I thought I came across a quote somewhere from James, and I don't remember exactly where it was, where he basically said that they gave it to their mixer and let their mixer do its magic to get the version you get on the album. Perhaps that was one of the things that they were able to do is find those that better guitar sound.
Yeah, because, you know, Skinner are one of those bands you said earlier that kind of pioneered that triple guitar attack and really balance the instruments well, you know, unlike, say, I don't know, Iron Maiden, for example, which, to be fair, Iron Maiden, they're kind of a metal band, so they're all playing the same riff, maybe doing a bit of harmonizing. Foo Fighters, I don't really like Foo Fighters, but they have 3 guitar players, which never made any sense to me. Foo Fighters really should be a trio, if anything, like, because there's no one's harmonizing, no one's kind of filling out the lead. But here they are. Here there's lots of different chords being strummed, and of course that mat new new new. Like, how can that not pull at your heartstrings? And also the new new new, like that chiming. Like, I don't know. I find this song quite emotional in a way.
I think that's supposed to be the case. I think they obviously tried to, based upon the lyrics is what it seems to represent. It certainly seems like they wanted the song to be an emotional heartstring. I will say, even though it's a live jam and that's going to drag it out a little bit, even the original is probably a bit too long. Definitely. for the dynamics of the song. Even though there are certainly parts that stand out and we can talk a little bit about them, but I think that it just does drag on a little bit, and I think that really makes it tough to maintain the energy over the full 9 minutes.
Yeah, I cannot deny that. Yeah, so the Garage Inc. version is 9 minutes 4, and Tuesday's Gone on the original debut, pronounced Lynyrd Skynyrd, is 7.5 minutes. So they add like an extra minute and a half on the top. But, you know, there is a kind of fade-out ending, and... you know, throughout there's ad-libs, which is nice, but really gives it that raw feel. You know, are you guys ready? James is asking, and then they do the roll call towards the end, and you can hear some of them going, yeah, and kind of really getting into it and really headbanging and stuff. Like, what would you make of that kind of relaxed feel?
Oh, I think that shows how talented all the musicians that are in that room really are, and that they can just pick, even though the song might not be the most complex to play, just to be able to kind of pick it up, probably with very little, if any, practice, and just kind of get through it and take off different parts and kind of blend that in seamlessly, I think is obviously a real talent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I really like the bass as well in this version. It's really earthy and wide. It really pulls everything together from Jason.
I agree, and it's certainly nice to have him get a bit of a spotlight, even if he's not soloed in any particular way.
No, and you can see that on the Bridge School benefit as well. I think Jason's a real standout there. He's really in his zone playing it, and just has some nice bass playing, you know, really kind of underscores a lot of the tension.
Right, and my favorite thing about the Bridge School benefit is Kirk's shirt.
Yeah, he's got that Mark Knopfler frilly, like, yeah, it's amazing.
Black and white country. Oh, we're playing a southern rock tune. Let me put on my country shirt.
Yeah. It is a little bit. Yeah, we get some James comedy as well there, where he's talking about, does someone ask Freebird? And, you know, asking for someone to push the stool in as well. It's that patented Het humor, right?
Exactly. And did you hear, since we're on the Bridge School benefit, did you see the Rolling Stone review about that show?
You know, actually, it's funny you mentioned that. I have covered that on the show before, because with John Stone, we went through all the Bridge School stuff. What was said? I can't remember.
I'll just highlight that the group recruited Allison Chains guitarist Jerry Cantrell to join them in an embarrassing, by-the-numbers version of Lynyrd Skynyrd's Tuesday's Gone that inspired many in attendance to follow Tuesday's lead and head for the parking lot.
Right, yeah, I remember that. Wow. Yow.
That's rough.
Yeah, that's... Ouch. Christ.
I'm not a big fan of the tune, but that's rough.
Yeah, I didn't think it was... I mean, yeah, like, it can be a bit ponderous and self-serving, yeah. And it certainly is really, really long, and it's not like there's that many lyrics, but undeniably an anthemic chorus, right?
Oh, absolutely, and fun to sing along, and I can imagine, you know, a big kind of amphitheater in the 70s, you know, a lot of people under the influence of different substances just kind of blaring along with it.
Yeah. And in the Garage Inc. version as well, cool to hear Pepper taking a verse and James introducing him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a huge Corrosion of Conformity fan, but, you know, I had a period in the early 90s where they were kind of big in the alt metal scene, if you will. And, you know, I followed them along for a little bit. And I think he's a talented dude.
He is actually. I've tried to get into them by proxy through Metallica. And there are some songs that I like Clean My Wounds. I think the guitar dueling in that song is really awesome, actually. But yeah, they just, I don't know, there's a few bands like that where just the riffing's a little too monotonous for my tastes and the songs get a little boring, you know?
Completely agree. Over the course of a couple albums, I just don't see the variation enough to really keep me interested.
No, yeah, entirely. And, you know, we hear lots of pathos being wrung out, really, through the guitars, you know, with the train rolls on towards the end, everyone getting those big notes and the fiddly licks and you know, just all everyone having their own little moment, but not always playing for the song, it feels. No one's kind of sticking ahead too much.
Sure. I think you can probably debate that a little bit when you get to John Popper and his harmonica.
It's a little long, yeah. I mean, people are vibing off it, but yeah.
54 seconds of harmonica is more than anybody needs.
I don't think I've ever enjoyed a harmonica solo ever.
It really isn't something that I ever got to. When I was around the early 90s, again, that kind of jam band resurgence that happened a little bit, I got a little bit into Blues Traveler, but for the same reason, it's just, first of all, he's become a bit of a jerk in real life.
Okay.
And at that time, you know, it was just too much harmonica for me to get used to.
Yeah, it's a bit like sort of keyboard solos, like Rick Wakeman, John Lord, Jordan Rudess, that kind of stuff. It just, there's something about the sound. It doesn't even matter the note choice or the licks. But even then, kind of harmonica solos just build to a big wheezing sort of idea, doesn't it? Rather than anything too intricate or endearing. Yeah, and I mean, undeniably, the song's too long as well. I agree. I've been listening to the song a lot over the past week, and I got to be honest, around 6 minutes in, I'm twiddling the thumbs a little bit.
You know, I have written down here, if it was 6 minutes, it'd be tolerable.
Yeah. Just tolerable.
Give everybody I think that it's 6 minutes, you at least would have, kind of an end in sight. You get to 6 minutes in that song, and there's still a whole nother verse to go. And it, unlike a lot of, you know, Freebird is the most obvious example, but, and a lot of the Metallica quote ballads, you know, what makes them so interesting, or at least somewhat interesting to me and a lot of people, is they might start out with a bit of a slow kind of melodical thing, but then at some point something kicks in or there's a dynamic shift. This song, just even the original, doesn't really have that. It kind of maintains the pace and the same feel throughout. And again, it's supposed to be a negative, a sad song in some respect. So maybe that doesn't really fit that wouldn't fit a different musical style. But yeah, definitely, even at a 6 minutes, I'd probably find it a little bit ponderous.
Yeah, no, entirely. And one of the things that the original has, as well as being slightly shorter, is that that warm Rhodes piano, you know, throughout.
Yes.
That kind of, I don't know, it gives it a kind of delicate kind of brown sugar layer that really works for me. I think it was Billy Powell, actually, who also survived the plane crash and played with Skinner. I think he died in 2009, which makes Gary Ruston the last surviving member. And it's mad to think that Gary Ruston's still performing with them. And, you know, you look at the front cover of the album, that classic cover of them with the lightning striking behind, and you can see, I think it's Gary just sitting and then Ronnie standing behind him. And I think Ronnie was like 28, 29 when he, like, they're all so young.
Oh yeah, very young.
Such a crazy fucking, like, I was telling my girlfriend today about it, and she doesn't really know Skinner. I was like, yeah, like, half of the band died, like, they didn't play for like 10 years or something like that. And I want to give a quick shout out as well to the Skinner podcast. I can't say I've listened too much to the latest episodes, but he's doing a bit of an Alf Metallica thing over there, going song by song and doing his own narrative and stuff like that. So, you know, any listeners out there that are into Skinner, definitely check that out. But, guys, this is Tuesday's Gone. There isn't much compositional difference between the first couple of minutes and the last couple of minutes. We get loads of thank yous at the end. You know, Lars can be heard saying, let's do that again as well.
Yeah, it's okay, Lars, take a break.
Yeah. And it sounds like, and I only really heard this with the headphones on, it sounds like someone's kind of putting on a faux retard voice or something right at the end saying thank you. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen that clip of John Lennon pretending to be disabled in the 60s.
Oh yeah,
but
sure.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I remember seeing that as a 17-year-old.
I'm going to go out of my. I'm going to take a guess and say that was Les Claypool. Why not?
Right. Yeah. Most likely. Yeah.
Or maybe Kitty from Alice in Chains.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those guys. Yeah. They'd certainly find that funny, I'm sure. Punching down. Yeah. That's kind of their bag. But as I say, this was on the "Don't Call Us, We'll Call You," and there was four songs on this album, I believe. So there was "Tuesday's Gone," and then "Low Man's Lyric," "Poor Twisted Me," and "Nothing Else Matters." And, I think, I got to say, I do prefer Skinner's original. I think that original is just one of those songs that can't really be matched or duplicated in any way. Of course, Metallica and Co., you know, they weren't trying to do exactly that. This was a stripped-down radio session homage. But I don't know, it doesn't quite get there for me. I think it should be shorter. There maybe should be more of a pronounced guitar solo rather than an anguished harmonica solo. But all in all, it isn't bad, Rick. You know, I certainly wouldn't say this is one of the worst things on Garage Inc. Like, wink, wink, Motorhead covers, wink.
I know you're not a big fan of those. No. I probably would put it in that bottom tier simply because it's so unlike the other stuff. And I think the interesting, you know, in regard to this song and the 30th anniversary show version, even though, again, that's the whole length, and what that one I think is actually the best version of the three that we're talking about, simply because it's got electric guitars, the solos are more meaningful, and, you know, James is singing a verse, Jerry Cantrell sings a verse, mm-hmm. Pepper Keenan sings a verse. You know, you got a little bit more trade-off that sounds more jammy but polished at the same time, so... I just wanted to kind of make clear that I think that's – if that was available, even though obviously it wasn't at the time they made Garage Inc., that would have been probably a much more, I think, a natural fit for the rest of the album.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you got Gary being ignored as well. It's got everything. You know, it's got everything you could ever want for a Digital Tuesday's Gone.
It's got horns, apparently.
Yeah.
There's horns in there somewhere.
Yeah. And I appreciate it as well, because the version I saw was free of a watermark. But for years, whenever I've tried to watch the anniversary, it's always like, I think it was like Fud Rocker or something. It was a really officious watermark on front. So that has now disappeared. But as we always do, guys, reach out to you on Twitter at Metallica Pod. What did you think of this song? Rao says, I've got to say, I've always enjoyed this cover by Metallica and their all-star friends since I originally heard it, which I believe was on the radio during a Christmas special. I dig the loose kind of jammy feel to it. It stays fairly faithful to the original. It sounds like the boys are really having fun playing this tune, which is always a bonus. Nice moment to listen to them when they're not trying to be perfect. Jamie, who's coming on the show soon for Unnamed Feeling, said it's bloody excellent. John Bradshaw says absolute rubbish. If I ever hear it again, it will be too soon. Skinner Reconsidered, here we go, the Skinner podcast, said, I dismissed it earlier in my podcast because it didn't seem like a song that needed to be covered. Then I listened to it, not bad at all. Chabo says, it's a great cover. I love how James can change his persona vocal range with non-metal songs. Absolutely love Skinner and Metallica. Hope they do another song in the future. Sabbath Bloody Podcast saying, I love hearing James and Pepper trade off vocals. You can definitely see how much cadence James borrows from him heading into the load sessions. And it's just a killer jam. The roundtable thank yous always crack me up. Dante says, in spite of the players, it's more of a jam session than a proper cover. It's too long and dragged out. And finally, Fixer says, it's rough, but I still enjoy it. Doesn't beat the original anytime soon, but I like how everyone sings in the chorus. Rick, any final thoughts on Tuesday's Gone?
I think the only thing that I would just mention is that we didn't really touch on Jim Martin being there. And I think Jim Martin is an interesting, even though he doesn't have much to do, he's kind of in the background of all of these things. I think he's such an interesting link between Metallica and at that 30th anniversary show, you know, they had the talk where him and James talked a little bit about Cliff, you know, at the same time in 97, he puts out a solo album that Jason Newsted sings a song on.
Hetfield sings backup. I have to listen to that.
Yeah, it's called Milk and Blood is the name of the album. And there's a song called Fatso's World. And Jason actually sings the lead, and it sounds like you would expect Jason singing the lead. It's not a particularly good album or song, but you can get it on YouTube.
Yeah, I'm just, I've got it up now. Came out October 97. And Hetfield's on backing vocals, you said.
Yeah, I'm not sure he's on backing vocals on that song. I think he's on another tune on that album. But overall, the song itself, Tuesday's Gone, is an okay cover version of a song that I wouldn't say I was super into it before, and I just think it's weirdly placed.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and there's a Pogues cover on that Jim Martin as well. Yeah, Navigator.
That I have to listen to, because that's got to be weird.
Yeah, definitely. And apparently he does a Faith No More cover as well, Surprise You're Dead. So he recovers that one.
That's basically his song anyway.
Right.
So I'm not surprised that he would try to reclaim that, and even if just for some publishing purposes.
Okay, that's interesting, though, because I did do an episode on all Metallica's guest appearances. I'm sure I found all of them, but there we go. I'll have to go back and do a volume two, because I've not heard either of those songs. So, as always, guys, this is Tom at MetallicaPod, MetallicaPod@gmail.com. Rick, finally, you know, we've gone through you and Metallica and all the top five questions, stuff like that. Like, musically, I know you're a big music head. Like, what have you been listening to recently? Anything of note?
Not particularly that I would say anything new that's really jumped out at me. I've kind of gone back into some of the stuff from like the early 90s. Mm-hmm. I think I might have mentioned a band called, I think I mentioned that I was a big Bob Mould fan.
You did, and actually. Yeah, you definitely did. Yeah,
and he plays in his band with a bassist, Jason Narducci, who is also in Superchunk's touring band. He's been in a ton of bands from like the early 90s through today. And he's still kind of a working musician. Anyway, he just put out some new music under his band Split single. So it's kind of power poppy, alternative power poppy stuff that I've been really into. And he's just, I've been kind of catching on that lately.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I think I don't know if we spoke about this before, because I remember you saying Superchunk before, and I did listen to them. And one of the artists that I noticed in related artists, the band that I actually really like, Archers of Loaf. You familiar with them?
Yeah, absolutely.
Great
Yeah,
band.
Archers Loaf, great band from that
Yeah.
band. Kind of very underrated and just kind of disappeared as far as I can tell.
Yeah, terrific band. I only really know Icky Mettle, which I think's the debut. Need to listen to more of that stuff. But yeah, reminding me a bit of, like, I don't know, Pedro the Lion and that sort of idea. And yeah, they're a great band. So yeah, I mean, and maybe you can put some Skinner in the rotation.
We'll see. If he does, if they do a
unlikely.
cover.
Yeah.
Maybe if they do a cover.
Yeah. But yeah, guys, as always, MetallicaPod at MetallicaPod, MetallicaPod at gmail.com. We've got some cool songs coming up. We've got Turn the Page coming up next week. Then we're digging into the Unforgiven trilogy, the first of which I'll be welcoming back Ethan Luck to the show. The last time Ethan was on solo was one of the earliest episodes when we did Blackened. Of course, Ethan from Metal at Your Podcast. And the guys have been on since, did like Enter Sandman and such like that. But yeah. As always, thank you for listening. Go check out all the archives. Go check out the discussion we did before with Rick on the Prince. That was a really good episode. Rick, anything yourself you'd like to promo? Or
nope, just keep listening to Tom, support the Patreons, and keep rocking.
No, thank you. Thank you very much, man. And yeah, thanks again for coming on.
See you later.